We are doing our class on the Jewish home. I want us to focus on something which we could all work on. You guys, you're all here in Israel. I apologize to our listeners. But here in Israel, there's a term that people show you with their thumb and two fingers. You guys familiar with this? Savlanut. Patience. What's the root of the word savlanut? I knew someone would say that. The word root is sabal. What's a sabal? Person that carries a load. What's savlanut? It's carrying the load of having patience. What do we call marriage in Hebrew? Marriage. What's marriage called in Hebrew? Nisu'in. What does the word nisu'in mean? The mutual uplifting. We take one another on our shoulder. What do we mean by patience? You come home after a day's work. You've had a tiring day. You walk through the door and you're greeted with a welcome. I'm so happy you came. The kids have been yelling all day. They're just waiting for you to put them to bed. And there's the garbage waiting in the garbage pail is overflowing. I asked you to take it out. Yes, I don't know why you didn't take it out. How was your day, by the way? And there are dishes in the sink which I didn't get to. But go, the kids are yelling. They're waiting for you. They're all yours. Okay. You just put down your bag and you go to be with the kids. And then you come out. And your wife says, thank you so much. What's happening with the dishes and the garbage? I'll get there. You're in the middle of doing the dishes, and your wife comes in and says, why do you line up the dishes this way? You know, I've asked you a million times to line them up the other way. Now you're thinking, maybe you could just say thank you for dealing with the kids and the dishes, and then we could discuss the order I lined up the dishes. And she looks at you and she's hurt. And you look at her and you're wondering, why are you hurt? We're going to explain this story in a minute, but I think that we have to be realistic with ourselves. Why is a person upset when this happens? Why is a person upset almost always? Because he hasn't yet perfected himself. We have to remember that. Chazal tell us that after 40 years in the desert, Moshe turned to the Jewish people and said, it's been 40 years, and God hasn't yet given you the heart to understand. V'lo natan lachem Hashem lev ladat. God hasn't yet given you the heart to understand. Chazal say that it takes 40 years for a student to understand his teacher. Yeah, you understand things on the surface. But there's more to understand, and the person doesn't understand it till 40 years later. And then he starts understanding. Doesn't mean then he finishes. Our wives, they are our teachers in certain ways, but we have to know that we don't understand them fully. I mean, we try, but you walk through the door, all you know when you walk through the door is one thing. I am tired. I want warmth and peace. I have come home to my castle. Wrong. You have finished job number one and you're about to enter job number two. The first thing we have to remember when we think about the home is that it's a job. You wanted a castle, go buy one. You wanted a home, takes work. All too often men enter the home with this imaginary castle in mind, and then they're very disappointed because suddenly the wife ain't no princess and the kids are no princesses or princes, and the house ain't no castle. So husbands try to fix it. How do they fix it? They say, I'll work another 2 hours a night and we'll get a mate. Is that okay? Whatever you do, you can have 10 maids in the house. Your house is still not going to be your castle. Not in the way that most people expect it. Chazal tell us, when are you a king in the home? When your wife is the queen. You cannot take the kingship. You could make her a queen. When you'll make her a queen, then by default you'll become the king. I think if you look at the Rambam, you'll see that in the Rambam's Lashon. We have to begin with the basic trait of patience. And patience is necessary when we don't think the other side has legitimacy. If I understand them, I don't have to be patient because I understand them. If I walk through the door and I'm told, I'm so happy to see you. I've had such a trying day. The kids have been yelling nonstop for 3 hours. The garbage is piling up, and every time I try to put something in the garbage, it falls over on the floor, and then I have to pick it up and put it in again, and then our 3-year-old comes and takes it out and puts it on the floor again, and then I put it in again, and then he comes and says, Ima, why'd you take it back in? Can I eat this? That's while the 2-year-old is screaming, and the 1-year-old needs to be taken to the doctor, and the 5-year-old is asking me to take time to do his homework, and the 7-year-old says that someone beat her up in school, and I haven't had a chance to talk to her. If you would have the backdrop to understand where she's coming from, maybe you wouldn't need savlanut. Maybe you wouldn't need patience. When we speak about patience, we're talking about patience when we feel like the other side has no legitimacy. When you walk through the door and all you're faced with is demands. When you walk through the door and you feel like you're being treated unfairly. When you walk through the door and you feel like you're not coming to the home you wanted to come home to and you're not getting the treatment you wanted to get. We're talking about the first reaction which we don't yet control, and that is disappointment, hurt, anger. And at that moment, the question is, how do we react? No one's saying that the wife in this story couldn't have done things more intelligently. No one's saying that the wife in this story could have done things more intelligently. Because maybe one day you'll have the good fortune of taking your wife's shoes for a day and spending 10 or 12 hours doing what she does, and then she'll come home. And maybe the first day you'll be okay, but try the 10th day or the 20th day, and they're doing it day in and day out. But savlanut, this patience, is necessary when we don't understand the other side. When we walk in through the door and we say, what kind of witch did I marry? What's going on here? Marriage is the most beautiful thing in the world. Marriage is the greatest gift. Adam and Rishon spent a period lonely. And Hashem created all of us like Adam and Rishon that we feel lonely. And that loneliness is necessary for us to appreciate marriage. Because we all repeat the error of Adam and Rishon. We all lack appreciation. We are all capable of turning to God and saying, I was okay when she wasn't here. I was a very decent individual. I didn't do anything wrong. We're all capable of that. And so Hashem gave us this loneliness to appreciate what we have when we have it. But what happens is that when we have it, we fall back into that error of not having appreciation. Really, we have the greatest gift in the world when we're married. The greatest gift in the world. Chazal said, you're not human if you're not married. Not human. You're not an Adam. You don't have the potential for Torah, for Simcha. How many things? The Gemara lists a myriad of things that a person cannot attain when he's not married. But let me tell you what happens to most people 6 months after they're married, 12 months after they're married, 24 months after they're married. Marriage goes through phases. And usually, the first phase is, a person is enthralled. This is even better than I thought. And he sees a bunch of beautiful things. And then, he enters phase two. And that's when guys come to me, and I say, don't tell me. And they say, no, you don't know. And I say, no, try me, let's see. And they say, no, guaranteed you don't know. I say, okay, give me just 1 second, let's try. He says, okay. So I say, witches are kinder than your wife. He looks at me. And I say, you've had roommates. You've had friends in this world. You've had relationships in this world. You know what people are like. And there's no one as bad as her. He looks at me and says, if you knew, why didn't you tell me before I married her? And the answer is, because everyone feels that way. What happens after marriage is, it's not that we discover that she's the worst person in the world. It's that she's the person that we're closest to. We've never been in such close proximity with a person, knowing that I'm going to be with this person till 120. A minute. And suddenly, every fault becomes blatant. And the pressures of regular, ordinary life are very big. And if you tell that to Chatan, so he's going to answer you and say, don't tell me a load of baloney. I grew up. My parents had 10 times the pressure she had. My mother brought up 12 kids. My mother never greeted my father like that. And I know what life's about. I know what people are like. I've been in people's houses. No one does that. No, I know. No one's suffering like me. No, this is ridiculous. When did you guys see your mothers? When did you start seeing what your home looked like? After your parents were married for how many years? 7 years, 9 years, 10 years, 14 years? When did you start understanding what you're seeing? Give yourself time. Marriage has potential for beauty if we give it that potential. Marriage becomes beautiful over time. We have to be patient. Savlanut. Remember this. And every time you see it, doesn't it get on your nerves? Makes you even more angry? So remember this. Savlanut. There was a very, very big Talmid Chacham. We learn his works here tonight. And all of the Jewish people learn his works every day. One of the most famous Jews in Jewish history. And he lived not so many years ago. And he went outside on the days that are most precious to us, the days at the beginning of the year, and he built the sukkah in preparation of Sukkot. And his wife came out and looked and said, honey, why'd you build the sukkah there? Wouldn't it be better on the other side of the yard? He looks. He thinks. And he says, you really think so? And she says, yeah. So he says, okay. He takes apart the sukkah, goes to the other side of the yard, and builds it there. 3 hours later, he's finished building. Remember, this is precious time, and this is one of the big sages of the Jewish people. I don't want to say his name, because I don't want you to know who his wife was. I'm scared of Lashon Hara. And after all the hours he took building it the first time, taking it apart, rebuilding it on the other side of the yard, she comes out of the house and looks at it and says, honey, you know what? You were right. The other place was better. What do you think he did? He took apart the sukkah and went to the other side of the yard and built it there. This same great sage, this same wife, would not go to sleep at night unless he spent hours talking to them. Not minutes, hours. And so hours every night, they would speak. But he didn't have, he didn't want to talk to her about the neighbor's cat. So he'd speak to her about Hashkafa. Most often, a woman doesn't care too much what you talk to her about, but she wants to be close to her husband. She wants to talk. So he spoke to her about Jewish philosophy, Hashkafa. And he spent hours every week talking to her until they'd go to sleep at night. Chazal tells us one of our obligations to our spouse is onna. We usually translate onna as intimacy. But the truth is that the word onna literally means time. Onna is a season. Hashem created us in a way that we men like to express affection, as do women, but we have a greater need to express it, and women have a greater need to hear it. You can never tell a wife enough times that you love her. No? And you have to be a little bit original to say it in different ways. And there exists a tendency that a woman wants to test, how far does he love me? How much does he love me? You guys, you're old enough. When I was a kid, they used to have this box that you could flick on and you'd see pictures. They called it a television. I was familiar with that, right? And then, every so often, they'd have a beep for a minute. And it would go beep, and then it would say, this is a test. This is only a test. If your something is working, etc. So there are times in marriage when you have to envision that beep. This is a test. This is only a test. If your marriage is working, you will respond in kind. Stop and think about it when it happens. And smile. Smile. The key is to smile. We're running short on time, so I want to touch on a few quick points. It is common that a wife will ask her husband, how much do you love me? Do you love me? This is a test. This is only a test. Part of what a wife wants to see is how much patience you have. If you really love me, you won't get upset by silly things. Who do you love more? Your mother or me? The answer? Of course you. Don't start explaining to her, well, love for a mother is different. You know there's love for a child and love for a toy and love for a wife. No, that's not the point. That's not what she wants to hear. She's number one. Finished. Nothing else to discuss. It says in the Song of Songs, Achat hi yonati tamati. My dove, my whole one, is singular. She's the only one. The only one. And we will expand on that Bezrat Hashem next week or in the future in our studies. This is a point that has to be 100% clear. The only one. She is the only one. And so long as she feels that, she feels happy and comfortable. The second she feels like there's something else that's close to being as important as her, be it the work, be it your Torah studies, be it your parents, you have a problem. The spouse has to feel and understand that they're the only one, the most important one. And nothing else comes within that realm. I want to end with one more point, just because it's really it deserves a whole class on its own. But you guys should think about it. And We said we'd try to make this class practical, so we'd end each time with something to work on during the week. What happens in third grade when you have a co-ed class? And there's a boy that likes a girl. So he pulls her pigtails. What happens when people are 25 and there's a boy that likes a girl? So he burps in front of her. So you guys are saying, what? No, of course not. But what happens when a couple is married and the boy likes the girl? So there exists an unfortunate tendency that people still like to tease one another. Boys like to tease girls, and girls like to tease boys, each one in their own way. And sometimes girls seem to be more good-natured than boys, and boys don't get this. I see from the shocked looks that you guys don't know what I'm talking about. But remember this after you're married. Because after you're married, and you become comfortable with your spouses, so then there reaches a stage where there's a common mistake that people continue teasing one another. And that's an area where the relationship should not hit. It's a mistake. And even if the other side seems to take it good-naturedly, the question is what's happening behind the facade. A husband burps in front of his wife, and she says, "Oh, that's disgusting." And he says, "Yeah, I know." It's not, what's she thinking? And these are small examples. But you know what? Life is built of the small things. There are small things that get on our nerves or make us happy throughout our lives. Marriage is the most beautiful thing that God gave us. Our relationship to God is described as marriage. Our relationship to the Torah is described as marriage. Our relationship to Shabbos is described as marriage. Why is marriage used as a metaphor for all these positive things? Because it is the most positive thing. It is the thing that encompasses all of these. We have to know how to build it to that direction. And one of the keys is savlanut, patience. It doesn't become that in a day. It goes through phases, ups and downs. And especially in the beginning, the downs are really rough. But you should know that once you've gotten married, any two people can build a beautiful home. Don't start thinking, no, she's not like the other ones. No, you've married her, then you've been meant to be married. And that means now you have the job of making it into a beautiful thing. Remember, this isn't a dating class. In the dating class, we describe how you choose who to marry. That's a different question. But once you're married, now it's your job to make it work. And it's work. It's work. Remember, you come home, you're coming home to your second job. You're not coming home to your castle. If you approach it as your second job, then eventually, Be'ezrat Hashem, after you're married for 14 years, 16 years, 18 years, at some point you'll come home and suddenly you'll look around and you'll see, hey, this is my castle. It's not the castle you're envisaging. It's a much more beautiful castle. But it is a castle. You'll see.